Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Warden. My guest today is Gaia Gaia. Gaia is the fifth generation of her family to work at the Gaia estate in Barbaresco in Italy's Piemonte region. You are which generation?
I'm the fifth one, together with my sister Rossana and with my brother Giovanni. I'm the older of the three.
Okay.
And we work all together. My brother started last year. So
really?
Yeah, all three together.
So let's go back, let's wind back in time. When was the estate actually founded and by whom?
Well, we are lucky to be the fifth generation because we have four generations before us that worked very, very well. Giovanni was the first one. Giovanni was my great-great-grandfather and was a farmer living in the village of Barbaresco, making wine for his tavern. So was already a particular farmer.
When did he start then? Roughly?
The winery was founded in 1859. That's when he started to produce wine. But at the time, big part of the wine was sold in jars. He had a tavern. The tavern was the place where people were coming for eating and drinking, and sometimes they were bringing away wine. So that's how started the commerce of wine. And the production of wine from jars, but he was also one of the very first bottlers as well, because I have in my cellar several bottles that they were bottled by him with no vintage. Sadly, I can't really be sure about which vintage was it, because often he was blending vintages together. So was just calling it Barbaresco Riserva. But he started. And then he had eight sons, yes, same wife. And only one of his sons took over, and that was the second generation. His name was Angelo. And Angelo and his very special wife, special because was a powerful lady, Clotilde Rey, together they represented the second generation. And they ran the winery from the 1910, 1915 up to 1937. And then in 1937, my grandfather came along. And my grandfather, I remember him. I have a lot of memories of him. He died in 2002, and he was a very proud, very accomplished man. You could see it in his eyes. My grandfather had one only mission in life, and that was putting the tiny village of Barbaresco on the map. He was a producer of Barbaresco. He was the mayor of the village of Barbaresco. He had an unbelievable faith on the fact that the best wine in the world was Barbaresco. And this totally irrational fate, I am grateful that he had an irrational fate, because in years of misery and tough time, he used all the savings he had to try to buy sites that in the village he thought were the best. So he didn't really continue the attitude of his father of trying to have the best sites and try to protect the dignity of his wine by not releasing the wine when he thought that was not qualitative enough. It's very unusual the way he was behaving, because during the war, in the 40s, in the 50s, every time due to the climate, due to the rain, he was not achieving a perfect quality, he was not selling it. He was selling it to other producers. So in my region, historically, all the most respected producers were not producers of Barbaresco as we are. They were producers of Barolo. Barolo, it's an area that is just 20 kilometers far away from Barbaresco, and it's an area that because of some historic and also technical reason always made wines that they were more structured, more ageable, more complex. And so the producers of Barbaresco, regardless of how good you were trying, were always considered the producer of a wine that was a lesser wine. My grandfather didn't accept that. And so he made a name for himself by putting very rigid parameters in the quality that he was trying to make. And then my father came along. My father finished winemaking school in 1961.
What's his name?
My father is Angelo, and he's now 79 years old. So he has been behind every aspect of our winery for more than 50 years. And this last 50 years, thanks to my father, together have been 50 years of revolution and very different way of behaving.
So when you say revolution, what are you referring to?
He has been like a hurricane. When he joined the winery of my grandfather, regardless of the fact that the winery was successful, that the name was recognized, that my grandfather was able of selling his wine in the best places in Italy, despite that, when my father came in, he started to revolutionize the vineyard. He started to introduce a new technique. He started to replant with a higher density of plants per hectare, look for different grafting, introduce green harvest, short pruning. In the vineyard, he also started to experiment because he's very curious. He started to experiment with varieties never planted before in Piemonte. So he had the ambition of trying to make a great Chardonnay, a great Sauvignon Blanc, a great Cabernet. So we have a single vineyard Cabernet, which is called Armagi. It's a tiny production respect to the 90% of what we produce at is Nebbiolo. But it's a very important Cabernet.
Why was at it least called Armagi?
It's called Armagi. Armagi. When I say Armagi, usually I remember this sound. I don't know if you hear it. No, it's the sound of the head.
Yeah, when you slap your head, when someone says something stupid, you put your palm to your head and you go, oh, you idiot, you dumb.
Yes, my grandfather was always looking at this vineyard and he was screaming, Armagi. That means, what a shame that here in the best, one of the best sites we have, south-facing in the center of the village of Barbaresco, you planted something that is not the best variety ever, Nebbiolo. But it's a very important, has been a very important wine for us because it proved to many people that they were not so accustomed and so not so aware of the beauty and the qualities of Nebbiolo, they could understand more easily the quality that we were looking to produce, the ambition that we had, the terroir of our land through a variety that they could understand. International varieties in Piemonte have not been as important as they have been for Toscana. Many producers planted after us Cabernet or Merlot to blend with Nebbiolo. We always keep it on its own. One only Cabernet, actually a bit of Cabernet Franc and Merlot. But it's a vineyard that for me represents the crazy, disruptive, futuristic ideas that my father had.
Iconoclastic. Yeah.
Yes, the attempt of shaking the industry of wine and trying to attract also the attention to a region that was not receiving enough of attention. So he revolutionized our pyramid of production. So my grandfather was making one wine, Barbaresco. My father was one of the very first producers to introduce the concept of single vineyard. So today we make single vineyard Barbaresco as well.
What are the names of those?
Costa Russi, Sori Tildin, Sori San Lorenzo. Sori San Lorenzo came out in 1967. So until the 60s, you didn't have producers making the concept in our area was, which by the way is not wrong, the concept of finding a balance by blending different sites and having an Nebbiolo coming from different areas of Barbaresco to make a Barbaresco. The concept of blending actually was so explored that sometimes they were blending vintages and not always the wine was only made with Nebbiolo. So the purity came from 1967, from the moment that the DOC was introduced and so became by law a necessity to have a wine only made with Nebbiolo. Before, not because people didn't care, but because each producer had a bit of his own secret recipe that was including also a tiny bit of local varieties, a tiny bit of Barbera, Dolcetto that were planted into the vineyard. But my father, and at the time he was not the only one, the very first producer that started to produce single vineyards was Bruno Giacosa with Falletto, and then Prunotto, Renato Ratti, my father, Vietti, started a different way of expressing the wines. No? The concept of single vineyard started then, and today is very largely applied by everyone, and actually the consortio now is authorizing, put on the map and authorized the use of menzioni geografiche aggiuntive, which are basically the crews name sites. He has been revolutionary even in the communication of the wines. He was the first one to use a dialect word on a label. Usually when you have to sell something, you try to use a very, if not pompous, but anyway, a very sophisticated created word. You call a wine a state of art, La Tâche, Opus One. You don't use a humble language like dialect. But the first time that a dialect word was used on the label was with Sori San Lorenzo. So Sori, it's a dialect word that my father wanted to use to define a crew. So instead of using a French word, crew, which by the way today you are not even allowed to use the name crew for an Italian wine. But since the beginning he started to use, he looked in our vocabulary for a word that could have the same meaning but in our language. So Sori represents for us the top of the hill that looks the site. That's how we call the top of the hills facing south. Sori comes from the word sole, soli, Sori. But then he continued also, I just explained before the name Darmagi. And he also has been very experimentative in the winery. So he's not afraid of walking away from tradition, and questioning tradition is just part of, I understood, of who he is. But not only questioning tradition, questioning everything and anyone, and even himself. So he introduced new oak, he tried with the smaller barrels, he tried with the different fermenters. Little by little with him, the wines, little by little, they started to change and they started to resemble more himself. And I like that, because when I drink the wines, I can see my father in the wines I drink. Today, the wines, they also resemble a bit more me and my sister and my brother, because we are coming as a new generation, bringing our energy to bring forward the many projects that my father has in his mind and that we are happy to bring forward. And also we bring our taste, our style, which in part is the style and the taste that we grow up with, and so it's part of who we are. I think that the beauty of a family business is that there can be a continuity. You have a continuity of an attitude, of certain values that you bring in your work, and that they come from the family you grow up in. But slightly bit the wines are changing, because today we are more involved and we are doing the tastings, and we implement our palate and our minds.
So what are you changing in Piemonte? Is it in the vineyard or the winemaking, the oak treatment?
No, we don't have to make real big revolutions, but our work is like probably your work, like every work, is not only one thing. You have so many details that you have to take care of. And so our job today is to reapproach every tiny detail and reconsider it. So every little detail can become a major project, can be highly reapproached. And we reapproach it accordingly to how the world is changing. And especially today you just have to look at the climate, how it's changing. So in a world that is changing, we have to change accordingly. We have to pay attention to different parameters respect to the past. For sure, in the past, in the vineyard, all the work was done in trying to achieve a full ripeness that was so complicated to achieve a degree of alcohol that was, you were trying to achieve not 12.5, but 13.5 alcohol. Today, all the vineyard, all the management of the soil, of the canopy, is reapproaching, trying to slow down the alcohol, the sugar accumulation. It's like riding horses that today you have to pull because they're going too fast.
Great analogy.
Yeah.
So in terms of climate change, because you don't just have that's your family estate in Barbaresco.
Mm-hmm.
You also have, the family also has an estate
in Toscana.
In Montalcino,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's called, what's it called, the estate there?
We have actually two estates.
Yeah.
One, a small estate, are 27 hectares in total, and is a little winery that we bought, so it was an existing winery with the existing vineyards. It's called Pieve Santa Restituta, and my father bought it in 1994 from a man that was retiring and that was looking for someone that could continue to carry his property.
And this is in Montalcino.
And that is in Montalcino. There are analogies between Nebbiolo and Sangiovese. Just the fact that you use one only variety, that are very prestigious historic wines, it's already enough to understand why from Barbaresco we moved to Montalcino. And then 2 years after, the family was growing. My brother was born in 93, and so my father felt so optimistic and so excited about the future of Gaia, now that there is a man that can carry on the name for other 10 generations. I'm joking. But that's also why my name is Gaia. Gaia was the firstborn, and he was very concerned that I was never going to carry the name Gaia. So just reinforcing it for him was a way to solve the problem. But in 93, my brother was born. In 94, we bought Pieve Santa Restituta. And then in 96, my father got excited about the idea of starting from zero completely a new project. This excited him because I think he was also in his 50s. So he was looking for a new challenge. Not that he didn't have enough, but he was looking to learn and by starting from zero in doing things. Usually in Italy, it happens that you heritate, or like happened to him, or that you buy an existing winery. But for him, Camarcanda was an opportunity to design it in every aspect since virgin land. And so in the area of Bolgheri, in an area totally different from Montalcino, totally different from Piemonte, in an area that doesn't have the evocative allure of the traditionalist and the modernist, and even the beauty of local varieties, in an area that we can consider is the new world of Italy, he decided to start his new project. And so we bought an important piece of land, because we started from 80 hectares of land that we bought in 1996, and I'm lucky because he arrived quite early. We are not pioneers in Bulgaria. Actually, we arrived in Bulgaria because pioneers before us gave us the confidence in saying this area is an area that has an incredible potential and can make beautiful and ageable wines. So with incredible respect for the great wineries like Sassicaia and Ornellaia and Guado Altasso and Grattamacco and Michele Satta and Le Macchiole, we decided to challenge ourselves with a new project. And so now we have three wineries. But next year, there's going to be a surprise, because always my father decided at the age of 79, decided to start a new adventure in Sicily and on top of Etna, on the volcano. So we say that now on the volcano, there is another volcano. And together with Alberto Gracci, which I like very much, and that shares with us, and especially with my father, an attitude, a pride, and also a seriousness in approaching work that we like very much. Together with Alberto Gracci, we bought 30 hectares of Carricante and a little bit of Nerello Mascalese. We don't have yet a facility. We are working on building it. But next year we will come out with a little bit of wine from Etna too.
Brilliant. It's so nice to have someone that speaks with such respect for the family traditions and love for the family traditions, and yes, speaks so clearly. And you know, your dad's obviously had a plan for everything he's done. Nothing was left to chance, and he's enjoyed enormous success. And it looks like his legacy is in very good hands. I obviously haven't met the rest of the family, but you spoke very eloquently and very clearly about your family.
It's not that we always agree, but for sure I have great respect for all his ideas and everything he did, and we continue in that direction. Sometimes with some, sometimes we also convince him that our way is can be different from his. But
is he a little bit Forbino? A little bit. He sort of, it looks like he's agreed with you, and then actually he hasn't agreed with you. Or is he like that, or is he just like, okay? Is he very black and white?
He's no, he's not black and white.
He's a tactician.
He's not black and white. Yes, but I have to admit also that there is no black and white, and that there are always different shades, and there is never something that is only positive. There isn't the good and the bad in everything you do, and it's nice to have him every day reminding us and showing us that there is something that you do that you think is 80% good, but there is a 20% bad effect, and that you should solve that problem. So he is challenging, but very inspiring.
That's a great note to leave things on. I want to say thanks to Guy Agar for coming in today to talk about the family winery or wineries in three of the most prestigious regions of Italy. You've spoken incredibly eloquently about your family, and we've all got a clear idea of the history of the estate and the impulses that have guided its success over the years. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for tuning into the Italian Wine Podcast. Our channels are SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, and Himalaya FM. We're also widely available on other podcast apps. Our official website is italianwinepodcast.com, and that's all one word. If you're using iTunes, feel free to rate the podcast or write a review. Thanks.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.